Hello, folks. This is the Knick Knack Podcast. I'm Knick Knack. I'm a queer, trans, and neurodivergent person. And this is my audio blog where I tell you about what's going on in my life, the things that keep me up at night, the things that make me excited, the things that make me happy, the things that make me sad. I recently ran across, as I was half asleep, the Anne Murray version of the Beatles song You Won't See Me. And that has inspired this episode, which I'm calling The Fear, parentheses, You Won't See Me. So, reminder of trauma warning, going to be talking about masking and being in the closet to one degree or another. So grab your favorite beverage, grab a breath, and we'll get started. So first, let's talk about how I know this song. I've been a Beatles fan for most of my life. Probably since the first time I heard Yellow Submarine in second grade. My teacher was Michelle Miller, for those keeping score, or at least that was her name at the time. And then I matured into full Beatles Nirvana by the time I was 10, which was about 1994. I believe it was my 10th birthday that I got a live Nirvana album that I can't pronounce. A river, I believe it's a river in Washington State, and there's a lot of indigenous inspired names in Washington State that I cannot pronounce. That was the Nirvana offering I got that year that I got my CD player, which I listened to but didn't really enjoy at the time. Cobain had died earlier that year. And then I also got Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I went the Sgt. Pepper route and eventually came back and circled around to Nirvana. And I love Nirvana just as not much, if not more, than I love the Beatles. I can't remember what order I got the Beatles albums. The Beatles albums at the time I was getting them were all on CD. And they were all the UK releases and UK mixes that were, or whatever, the standard UK catalog that was being issued in the 90s was the time. So this would be 94, 95, 96, possibly into 97. Flaming Pie came out that year. The Paul McCartney album Flaming Pie came out that year. And that was part of all that. And Linda McCartney died around the same time. So I remember all that pretty clearly. Also remember, of course, George being stabbed in, what was that, 99, late 99. So yeah, that was all part of that whole thing. So that was my peak prime Beatles era. And sometime in there, I discovered the magic that is Rubber Soul. And the album that is Rubber Soul, of course, is heavily influenced and inspired by Dylan. Classic country, classic folk. And I was heavily into studying music as a kid before my voice very unfortunately changed. And one of my most influential music teachers in school was My junior high music teacher, Mrs. Delgado, who taught both band and choir. And I was in choir for all of junior high and then all of high school. I had lost interest by high school, but that was just the way it was. So, but in junior high, it was good. In junior high, it was a positive thing. It was pre-voice change. It was everything I wanted it to be. At one time, while I was in choir, this was must have been eighth grade, because we were doing a medley from Forrest Gump, which had come out in 94, I think. So, still popular at the time. This was 97 or 98, probably 98. And so we were doing this Forrest Gump medley, and we were singing some of the songs, and I was into my John Lennon phase now at that point in my life, and I had grown what at the time was moderately long hair. And of course, the hair was complained about. It was probably the earliest sign that I was into being or having a trans identity, and it wasn't really seen all that well. It kind of came out of me seeing the picture of John Lennon associated with the White Album, where even though John Lennon is a man, he just looks so pretty, especially when his hair, oh my God, his hair is magic. The or was magic when the light hits it right, his hair turns red, and I've always been jealous of that because I've always wanted naturally red hair. But anyway, the White Album picture of John Lennon in the book jacket, I was inspired by that. I wanted long hair, I got long hair. I have dark, almost jet black brown hair, German heritage. So that's what's going on for me. And so when that became long, it looked more like apparently James Taylor, because somebody commented at one point while I was performing in the eighth grade choir scene, "Oh, you look like James Taylor." And I knew James Taylor, of course. My mom and my dad both loved James Taylor, so that was a big influence for me as well. And James Taylor was an Apple artist. His famous line in the song "Carolina in My Mind," I can't. I'm trying to remember the line off the top of my head. "With a holy host of others standing around me, still I feel on the dark side of the moon," I think is the line, referring to the fact that the four Beatles were kind of in his circle. He was kind of in the Beatles circle, and he was still apparently feeling inadequate, which I sort of understand because it's the Beatles, but also, geez, James, you must have been really lonely. You must have really been feeling that London Town vibe at the time that he described later in the song "London Town," which is a song I absolutely love. But I digress. So yeah, I was looking very James Taylor apparently in my attempt to look John Lennon, which is hilarious because I think if you look at the original situation, I think John was growing his hair because he was John and it was 68 and he was going through a lot and they had the stay in India and he grew long hair. I think it was a case of John grew long hair, George grew long hair also, and James grew long hair because it was hippies' time and George had long hair. And I grew long hair because John, to some extent George, and the 60s, and I wanted to, and also it had this wonderfully appealing, what at the time I thought of, though couldn't. There was no way I could have articulated this. It had this wonderful masculine femme look, and that's what I was going for in my head. I don't think I actually pulled it off very well if I look at pictures. Not that I go back and look at pictures very often, but this was kind of the place I was in. And during my time in junior high, especially, I was in this program called after school program, after school show choir thing called Kids Love Music. That was influential too, but most of what I learned about music was during those 2 years I was in Mississaugato's mixed choir and concert choir in junior high. That was kind of the highlight of my musical exploration and learning phase for me. And then later I became an artist in my own right to whatever degree I am, by writing that Say What You Want to Say and a couple of earlier songs that I recorded around the age of probably roughly between 16 and 19, and then became a full whatever the hell I am today in the time sense. So anyway, I've made this into a long story. It needn't be. Suffice it to say, I ran into the Beatles album Rubber Soul at some point. I had to buy all the albums on CD at Tower Records. They were not cheap. I did not have a lot of pocket money at that time. And I listened to it for what it was, a Beatles album. I didn't hear in it Dylan. I didn't hear classic country and Elvis and early rock and roll and Johnny Cash and any of that influence. I just heard a Beatles album because it's the Beatles and this is a Beatles album. And I absolutely loved it. Still to this day, even though Sgt. Pepper was my first album that I got. First album that I had on CD. Unfortunately, I lost all my original CDs in my 2010 trip to England, long story. But it was a Beatles album. And it is to this day my favorite, even though Sgt. Pepper was my first. The White Album, for me, I know this is not the case for many Beatles fans. For me, the White Album, Let It Be, and Abbey Road are so horribly, horribly tainted by the breakup era, the era within the group's history and story and timeline, where they were clearly drifting apart and becoming four individuals, which was great for them personally, but horrible to experience as a fan, even 30 years later. That makes, for the most part, that makes Abbey Road, Let It Be, and the White Album unlistenable for me. There are definitely many, many tracks that I enjoy, and I'll go through and listen to the individual tracks, but I won't listen to the albums very often. The exception being out the big one on the B side of Abbey Road, because you kind of have to listen to that all the way through most of the time. Occasionally, I can get away with listening to You Never Give Me Your Money, but usually it devolves into listening to the whole second side of that album. But anyway, that's a bit of my Beatles mystique. So a lot of what I learned about the Beatles and about music happened simultaneously in seventh and eighth grade. I started learning intervals, I started learning basic chords, things like that. I learned about the key change, which as a composer is absolutely my favorite tool. So it's no surprise then that the Beatles song, it's a Paul McCartney song, I do believe, based on the vocal, You Won't See Me, is one of my favorite songs. It's kind of marred by the early Beatles songwriting style to me in a lot of ways, but it does have some content in it, particularly in that I'm looking at the chord progression now, based on the Anne Murray version, so the chord progression is likely a little bit different. But the first verse is G, A7, C, G. You kind of have a verse chorus thing going if you count two lines as a verse and two lines as a chorus. And then you have the middle eight, which of course is so important for Beatles tunes. And the middle eight is where things get fun compositionally. And the Beatles were very good about this in their early songs. And Anthony and many other Beatles fans are right to point out, hey, you need to respect the early Beatles work because it's awesome and you underestimate it. And they are absolutely right. Because in this song, the first verse chorus combinations are pretty formulaic. You get a sense of the song, you get an introduction to it, and then you get a key change. And it totally shifts the dynamic of the song. And in this song, it's you get it at on an A minor, according to again the Anne Murray version of this. And it's time after time you refuse to even listen. I wouldn't mind if I knew what I was missing. So it's a simple transitional element of a song. It's just kind of a middle bit of a song, really. Bridge, that sort of thing, middle eight. But it does so much because it changes the key. And the rest of the song after that, when it goes back and does its repeats and all the fancy early Beatles stuff that it does, it recalls that transitional piece. And instead of doing what many later Beatles songs would do, which they would have their transitional piece and then they would keep going, because the song is repeating, it's calling back to the key change. It's making you almost want to go, okay, you started to go off in this di different direction here with this good bit of the song, Paul, I think, and then you went back and you did repeats and you lingered. Why did you do that? But also, it worked creatively because if you look at the lyrics, when I call you up, your lines engaged. It's either your lines or your lies engaged. I always heard it as your lies engaged. I've had enough, so act your age. We've lost the time that was so hard to find, and I will lose my mind if you won't see me. You won't see me. I don't know why you should want to hide, but I can't get through. My hands are tied. I won't want to stay. I don't have much to say. But I can turn away if you won't see me. You won't see me. Time after time, you refuse to even listen. I wouldn't mind if I knew what I was missing. Though the days are few, they're filled with tears. And since I lost you, it feels like years. Yes, it seems so long since you've been gone. And I just can't go on if you won't see me. You won't see me. So, very simple lyrics. Very simple lyrics. But because of that middle eight, that's the middle eight, that's the bridge, that thing, that mechanic that everybody in early Beatles songs is always talking about. You get an element of a key change, you get an element of a new idea, you get an element of something that, again, I think it was written by Paul, I think it was sung by Paul. You get a hint of something that the Beatles never fully explored because. Well, it was 1965. They didn't have a lot of time to write their songs. They just didn't have the chance to really fully explore it. In the modern light, for me, when I hear those lyrics, they make me think of masking in an artistic context. They make me think of being in the closet in a queer and transgender sense. Yeah, it's a love song, but it's a pretty poorly masked love song. It's very much in that vein of "You're Looking Through Me," also from Rubber Soul, I believe, and another Paul song, and also "Hey, You Got to Hide Your Love Away," a John Lennon song from the Help album in 1965, earlier that year. Ticket to Ride, also John Lennon, 1965, earlier that year. And It's Only Love, John Lennon, 65, earlier that year. So This is very much of that era, of that time where the Beatles are so caught in their fame, so caught in playing the role that they are expected to play and not being able to write a fuller song. This was probably as free as they felt they could be until later in their career. So that was that song, and I always enjoyed it as a quintessential piece that I didn't really fully appreciate on Rubber Soul. And Rubber Soul overall, I believe, is not really fully appreciated for what it is, as heavily influenced by Dylan, early rock and roll and classic country, Johnny Cash and the like, and folk as well. But when you look at it in a modern context, particularly when you hear for the first time, as you're half asleep, the Anne Murray version of the song, and you are slowly, cautiously, but also openly heading towards a trans female gender, you suddenly see the song in a whole different light yet again. And God, do I wish I had Murray's range and vocal talents. Of course, I also wish I had Lennon, McCartney, and Harrison's range and vocal talents. I have neither of those. I'm stuck with the vocal cords I have, which I have used and abused to some degree. So when I heard, I was sitting here a couple hours ago, half asleep after flying in the simulator to London, and I was sitting here and I was listening to the song, and I heard the Anne Murray version, and I was half awake to go, okay, I'm thinking about my gender transition. I'm thinking about what I want to be. I'm having the dreams I've been having lately. But also, I'm singing in a wonderfully beautiful female voice Beatles lyrics that I clearly recognize and clearly see. What song is that? What song is that? And then I start to wake up and I realize, oh, it's a cover version of You Won't See Me. And oh. So that was a beautiful moment that happened to me a couple hours ago. I'm sorry I'm so long-winded, and I'm sorry it always takes me so long to get to my damn point on these things. But it's such an awesome song, particularly the Anne Murray version of it. The original version too, of course. Hats off to you, Paul, there. Please don't sue me for quoting your lyrics. But yeah, this is kind of one of those things where I announced on Facebook that I was wanting to transition to female. And I did it primarily through this podcast, because that's the way I do things. And also Facebook vis-a-vis promoting the podcast, and then also telling people as personally as I could what was going on. And I view that as kind of a cowardly way to come out, but that was the way I was going to do it because that's the safest way, because I'm used to people not seeing me. I'm used to feeling not validated. I'm used to having to mask 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or so it seems, when I'm in public, kind of in air quotes there. But, I did it. And a good friend of mine saw that I did it, said, hey, it's October 11th. It's coming out day. I'm going to do my own thing and celebrate coming out day. And I didn't realize it was coming out day. I'm not that aware in the queer community. I wish I could say I was. I've always been I was closeted forever. I didn't realize it. I had no idea that Nicholas in eighth grade was a very confused teenager that was dealing with the early signs of being transgender, being autistic, as well as being queer. I had no idea. I would not know that for years. Now, of course, I know that. And, I regret that I didn't see myself and it took me that long to do it. But suffice it to say, I'm hoping to have my friend on at some point, and I'm hoping we can talk more about what I'll loosely call trans and queer life. And there's this great DoubleClick song, Nothing to Prove. It's about Gamergate, basically, and this whole women aren't geeks crud that male gamer geeks occasionally come up with. The lyrics to it are much better than just that particular issue, because one does enter a geek world, or the queer world, or the trans world, through rejection and honesty. Being nerdy, being weird, being a geek, being strange, isn't rejection. It's a label that belongs to us. So, we end up in this place of weirdness. And maybe weirdness comes to be an important part of your identity as being trans or as being queer, or maybe you had more of my life experience and you became the sad, lonely, isolationist geek spending their high school and junior high years primarily playing single player games on a computer. Whatever your individual experience was, I'm not sure. But I think we're all pretty connected in that we felt alone. We felt isolated. And suddenly, sometimes at some points in your life, if you're damn lucky and you find just the right scene, you have the right community. It's happened for me in other places to a larger degree. But sometimes, if you're damn lucky, you'll find your space and you'll find people that will see you. So, if you see me, even if you're in alone in isolation, thank you for seeing me. If you see others who are trans, queer, neurodivergent, have physical limitations, anything like that, thank you for seeing them. Thank you for listening.
Are the schools shitting out fools who believe what they read and believe what they see? Don't believe them and don't believe me. I'm a tool. I'm your changes of mood. I'm a drug in your food. Don't believe them and don't believe me. Get out of my head. There's a thought crime running through my head. Can't take these rules, and people are fools, but I need them. I desperately need them. Thank you.
you'd like to support my work, please head to knickknackpod.net. That's knickknackpod.net. Reviews in the podcast apps help as well. The opening music is Raindrop Rhapsody by Josh Oakenberry. The bridge to the outro is the wonderful Fool's Guide by Anthony Rotunno. You can find Anthony at anthonyrotunno.com. And the closing music is, of course, Catch Me If You Can by Attica Attica. You can find Attica Attica at atticaattica.bandcamp.com. I thank all these wonderful musicians for allowing their creations to be used in this production. I share and know the value of the Creative Commons approach to intellectual creations, which is why the Knick Knack Podcast and FS Ride-Along series is copyright 2006 through 2021 by Knick Knack Marsh and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 4.0 International License. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. May you find the safety and support you need to empower you and meet your needs. Bye.